for AntiWar.com and Chaos Radio 95.9 in Austin, Texas. I'm Scott Horton. This is AntiWar Radio. And on the line is Mark Ames from the Exiled Online. That is exiledonline.com. And let's see, his book is called Going Postal. And there's another one, too, I forget. Hey, welcome back to the show, Mark. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, first question is this. Are you the war nerd?
I have no comment, and I never have any comment on that.
Oh, I see. That's how that works, huh?
That is. No comment whatsoever.
Okay, so there may actually be a war nerd, or it might just be your alter ego, and let the comment section continue to argue about it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, okay, to be fair, no, I'm not the war nerd. I'd like to take credit for it. War nerd is definitely real. That kind of writing and that sensibility, you know, just doesn't pop out of the blue. It's real.
You know, honestly, maybe you just fooled me, but that's what I thought, was that this guy, Gary, whoever he is, he's as good a writer as you, but different. And, boy, he sure is smart, man. I love his article. His piece on the Iran-Iraq War is the best thing that anybody ever wrote about the Iran-Iraq War. Forget it.
Yeah, I know. And he kind of reminded you that that the Iraqis could fight. Because I remember once I was in this was just right before the invasion in 2003. I was out in Moscow, and I was sitting in this restaurant where a lot of foreigners hang out. And in the booth behind us, I was with some other guys from the Exile. In the booth behind us, there are these guys, these kind of like macho, imperialist, who knows what, you know, military types, whatever. And they were just loudly bragging about what sort of like what clowns the Iraqis were, how they couldn't fight, how, you know, they had to be chained to their bunkers or to their pillboxes in the, I think it was either the 67 war or 73 war against Israel. And, you know, it was that kind of hubris and stupidity and ignorance that, you know, that led these idiots into thinking, hey, we can go in, wipe these clowns out, and occupy the country, and they'll love us. I mean,
right.
And that was what was so great about Gary's article. I mean, it reminded that what an incredible, bloody, you know, World War One style war that the Iran-Iraq War was. And it went on for 8-9 years.
Yeah. Well, there's another important lesson in there, too, which is that Saddam Hussein thought the same thing about the Iranians and learned the hard way that it ain't so easy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. It's like against like Hitler with, you know, with the Russians. He saw that Stalin couldn't even beat Finland, thought this was going to be a piece of cake. And, you know, look what happened.
All right. Yeah. Well, you got it. So listen, you got this new article at the Exiled Online today, Confessions of a Wall Street Nihilist. Forget about Goldman Sachs. Our entire economy is built on fraud. And so I want to start with foreign policy so that we can make this as antiwar.com friendly of an interview as we can.
Sure.
Would you characterize the warfare economy itself and the world empire as a fraud, Mark?
Well, absolutely. In fact, I think that's one of the advantages and one of the reasons why guys like Cheney and all these companies love war and occupation so much, because the farther away you get from sort of a law-based society, however like broken our law-based society is, but the farther away you get from it, the easier it is to cheat, steal, and fraud. And so Iraq was the perfect way to just cash in gazillions of dollars for, you know, companies like Halliburton and everybody else who was in there. They love that stuff, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, it reminds me of an article that Lou Rockwell wrote one day about, this is kind of a while back, I guess, about how as horrible as the Democrats are, in a sense, they love and care about the state and they want to kind of conserve it and protect it because they love it in and of itself, in a way. Whereas the Republicans are just the party of the corporations. Not that the Democrats aren't, but the Republicans, the only real emotional attachment to the state that they have is to the military. The rest of the government, they could give or take for the most part. They see it as, you know, some bleeding heart attempt to help somebody or something, so they're against that. but they just see the government or their time in power as a chance to simply rape the Treasury for everything it's got. In fact, my friend Shauna says that they don't even care if they get reelected. I mean, if you go ahead and reelect them after 4 years of completely getting raped, then great. But really, they don't even mind. If they can just get in there for 4 years and steal everything in the place and go, then they're really happy, and they don't really care what kind of damage they leave in their wake either.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely agree. Although I mean, Lou Rockwell, I'm surprised. You know, he even has a little more sanguine on the Democrats than I would be. I think the old school Democrats might have had a better view of the government as something that can, you know, do some good or whatever. But I don't think that's been the case with the Democrats for the last, you know, 20, 30 years. I think they just kind of they pretend to be that way, but they just serve Wall Street interests. That's their main backer. You know?
Yeah, it's their supporters who love the state, not the
right.
party anymore.
Exactly. I mean, they, you know, they're just not as rapacious as Republicans. That's all you can say about the Democrats. They're not as rapacious. And what the Republicans do is they bash the hell out of the state because that's, you know, that's a deep fundamental belief of Americans going back to the founding of this country is distrust of the state. But they use that to just get in power and then rape the hell out of the country, and then they finally get tossed out, and then they say the reason why everything's so broken is because of socialism and the Democrats, even though the Democrats are Wall Street, you know, they're in Wall Street's pocket, and eventually people get pissed off and sort of think, yeah, that's right, these guys, the state is screwing everything up, look how corrupt it is. They let the Republicans have a chance on the theory that at least they're more, at least you know what you're getting. And then when you get it, it's so much worse than you thought it would be, even expecting it to be horrible. That's, you know, that's the problem with the system right now.
Well, and as far as fraud goes, I'm sorry, I haven't even had a chance to read this piece yet. But, you know, as far as the title goes, our entire economy is built on fraud. I'd like to second that. And here's a little anecdote for you, and you can take it whichever direction you like. I think this goes along with what you were just saying there. When the vile, evil, satanic killer Phil Graham, former senator from Texas, issued a bill to repeal Glass-Steagall in 1998, which Bill Clinton signed, the most free market, laissez-faire, individualist, libertarian politician in American history, Ron Paul, opposed it and voted no on it. And he gave a big speech saying, look, the whole system is based on fraud. If you repeal this one regulation, really all you're doing is you're taking a cap off of how much fraud they can commit. This is not deregulation. This is not laissez-faire in a free market economy. We have a government-controlled central bank that gives every private bank in the country permission to print bogus money all day long and lend it out and then charge people face value plus interest in their real life's work to collect back. And so if you take away Glass-Steagall, all you're doing is making the problem that Congress already caused worse. What do you say
I'm really impressed. That's cool because I didn't know that. I would have thought that he would have, you know, voted sort of on a free market principle along with him. It's impressive. I like that. And Dorgan also gave a big speech, right? So Dorgan's like a progressive on the left. But he didn't come at it the same way. I mean, I can see how that works. So, you know, Ron Paul approached the problem from the point of view that the Fed already skews the whole game so much for Wall Street and the banks that you've got to have it. If that's got to be there, then you've got to have it regulated. Otherwise, the whole thing is just going to be one giant Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And that's interesting. That's right. I think that's absolutely true. And speaking of, you know, the Federal Reserve, I mean, Alan Greenspan's philosophy was that fraud should not be regulated and may the best fraud win. And, you know, if you watch this, there was a brilliant and infuriating documentary on like a Frontline documentary, I don't know, a few months ago about how Greenspan and Bob Rubin from, you know, who became Citigroup's chairman and Larry Summers, how they forced out Brooksley Bourne because she wanted to regulate these derivatives, which eventually wound up crashing, you know, the whole economy in 2008. She kept trying to raise this problem that these need to be out in the open, transparent, and need to be regulated. And Greenspan told her straight up, it's not up to, and he said this in testimony, government regulators should not regulate fraud. It's not up to them. The market, which is a euphemism for, you know, insider con men, they should regulate fraud among themselves. and may the best fraud win.
Yeah, well, don't worry. His wife, Andrea Mitchell, is going to get to the bottom of it for you on NBC.
Yeah, no, it's
but no, you know what? I want to stay on that point for just a second here, which is that that guy's got to be the most evil, cynical, criminal liar this side of Phil Graham to say something like that. I mean, speaking as an absolutist, anarcho-capitalist, libertarian dogmatist here, stealing is a crime. Stealing is prosecutable. It's not whether in an anarchic system or in a minimal laissez-faire, you know, as laissez-faire as you could get kind of state. Stealing is a crime. You know, public grand jury or private one, somebody goes to jail for stealing millions, billions of dollars from people. For Greenspan to be literally the Soviet commissar of the American currency, and personally, by his own whim and decision of a pen in his right hand, set the reserve ratios at 1,000,000 to 1, and tell every bank in the world, commit as much fraud as you want, and then, oh, but we'll let the free laissez-faire market decide whether you should ever be put in check or not, is insane. Especially when they even have a whole thing called the Greenspan put, which is that if you're rich and powerful, you know that Greenspan won't let the market kick your ass for fraud. Look what the market did to Enron. The market destroyed Enron. If Greenspan had had his way, he would have gone in there and bailed him out. We'd still be dealing with Enron's fraud to this day.
Yeah, no, if I had my way, he'd be the first guy that they'd frog march and put him on a real trial and a public one. Because you get the whole every Ponzi scheme of the last 30, 40 years and everything that's gone bad just through this guy's life. You know, I was looking through some old archives actually just yesterday, and, you know, the first time he made headlines in America, as far as I could see, was 1974. He just got named the head of the Council of Economic Advisors in Ford's administration. And he goes and speaks, if you remember, or if you've read it, you know, 1974 was a really nasty recession. It was, at the time, the worst one since the Great Depression. And in the middle of this recession, he's at this meeting with all these sort of different interest groups to talk about, you know, policies and what they should do. And some guy stands up and says, you know, don't you think maybe that your policies are a little bit kind of too skewed towards the rich and a little bit against the poor? And he was actually kind of a little overly humble when he asked the question. And Greenspan's answer was, no, actually, Wall Street brokers are hurting more than anybody, and they're suffering more than the poor. And, you know, actually people jumped to their feet screaming and booing and hissing because people were a little less, I don't know, brainwashed then or something. And so, you know, you start with that. This guy is only thinking about Wall Street brokers right from the day he took office. And then in the mid-'80s, people forget about this. You know what, you know who he lobbied for in 1984 and 85? Charles Keating. he was his lobbyist. He personally wrote letters to the regulators saying, would you please stop regulating this guy's savings and loan bank? He's a stand-up guy. He's a great guy. And, you know, he just wants to do more investments. Pull back your regulators. And he put together the Keating Five. He lobbied the congressman. Mm-hmm. You know, and Keating was, I mean, that guy was as dark and evil as it gets.
Well, you know, as far as the favoring the elite, Jon Stewart called him out on this on The Daily Show just maybe a year and a half ago or something. I think, no, maybe it was 2.5 years ago or something before the crash happened. And Stewart is saying, or maybe it was right after, I don't know. Anyway, and Stewart is saying, yeah, but you know, when you crank down the interest rate in order to prop up the stock market, that really hurts the little old lady with the savings account. And you're hurting her on behalf of Wall Street, right? And Greenspan said, yeah, I am.
Wow, really? I got to go find that then because, it is what he did. I mean, in 2004, not only did he bring interest rates down to zero to pump up this giant bubble, that was pretty much, I guess, the last year, 2004. But that year, he actually started giving speeches promoting Alt-A and subprime loans. So he was actually pushing this stuff. And then the next year, he resigns, and then what does he do after that? He goes to work for three huge funds that bet against housing. Paulson and Company, right, which is involved in this whole scandal with Goldman, this whole fraud scheme where they created, you know, fake instruments and bet against the housing market. He worked for PIMCO, which made $2 billion the day Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were nationalized in 2008. He's a lobbyist and advisor for them. And he worked for Deutsche Bank, which is also under investigation for fraud. So this guy is just, you know, he is a VIP. He's like the very top of the pyramid of this fraud. And look, I don't think Obama is going to do anything, whether he wants to or not. It doesn't look like he's really going to do anything serious. But if he is, Greenspan's the guy that they got to haul before the court, because he is criminal number one.
Yeah, he has sovereign immunity, dude. He's Sir Alan Greenspan to you, and he ain't going nowhere but the retirement home.
Yeah, how did he get, by the way, how did he get knighted while serving the United States of America? I
don't because that is outright banned by the U.S. Constitution doesn't mean anything. You can ask Sir Dick Cheney and Sir Colin Powell about that if you want.
It's pretty horrible. And you know, and these guys not only did they do this here, but they did this all over the world. I've been reading again about what the Clinton administration did and the banks did in the crises, like, you know, in Asia and Russia and so on, and in the mid late 90s. And again, I mean, these guys went around and destroyed country after country that had a short term problem, starting with Thailand. And, you know, look at Thailand today. They're still battling in the streets, and a lot of that really goes back to the bailout in 1997 and the way that the bailout was structured. That, you know, all of these governments like Thailand and Korea and Indonesia, they had to agree to these reforms, which had nothing to do with helping those countries and had everything to do with opening up you know, basically letting in Wall Street and banks and investment funds and so on, letting them into these markets so that they could plunder the hell out of them the way they're plundering our country and wherever else they're let into. And they were squeezed. They were all caught in a squeeze, and we let them sort of hang until they agreed to let our banks in and ruin them more.
Okay, cool. Well, but this is, I think, what you're getting at in this article is how you know, our culture is rotting from the top down by, you know, led by our leaders. They're taking this whole culture with them into shamelessness, really, right? The part where, and not in the way that a right winger complains about people's, you know, private life and that kind of thing, but in the sense of nobody really thinks that wrong is wrong anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is where the rot happened, and it is pretty shocking. I mean, I remember I did an article last year on Larry Summers, you know, who's running our economy, and how this guy joined the board of this company called Revolution Money. He joined the board in like 2006 or 2007 and owned shares. Revolution Money was started up by Steve Case, who, you know, with AOL, was involved in one of the biggest fraud scams when AOL and Time Warner merged, right? It's considered the worst deal in business history. So Case brings Summers on board for this company, and then he brings Frank Raines onto the board of this company. Frank Raines oversaw unbelievable amounts of accounting fraud at Fannie Mae. And this company, Revolution Money, was basically going to be an online, you know, credit card company that preys on people with no credit and charges them ridiculously high interest rates. So I was explaining this to Bill Black. I don't know if you've seen Bill Black. The guy, he's great. He was a regulator of the savings and loan in the 80s. And Charles Keating actually wrote a memo saying, kill Bill Black, kill him dead, because Black is the one that got him prosecuted and tossed in jail. Anyway, I was telling this to Black, and he said, you know, it's just unbelievable. I mean, there was a time that polite society, I mean, however corrupt they may have been, polite society would not have allowed a guy like Frank Raines, who's accused of billions of dollars of accounting fraud, to sit on the board of a company with the president of Harvard, who became, you know, the head of who headed up the White House economics team. It wouldn't have happened. But now people are so used to it, and this is a new phenomenon, that polite society doesn't even notice anymore. And all that matters is he got away with stealing millions or hundreds of millions for himself. And so, yeah, it has got markedly worse. And again, when you have, know, the most powerful banker in the world, Alan Greenspan, who people kind of look to as a guru, saying fraud is not a crime. It's nothing that we should regulate. Fraud is just part of the market. When you have it from the top down that way, I think people, it reminds me of what happened in Russia. I mean, when they wound up adopting a similar kind of economic model, which is just everybody for himself, it really became that. There were no morals anymore. It was just law of the jungle stuff. And
but starting off from the most unfair thing where every government-owned industry was just handed over to a different single private crime lord. It's not like they passed out shares to the people of Russia or anything.
Exactly. And that's, and the problem with all that, again, this was all sanctioned by the Clinton administration and a bit of the Bush 1 administration. And, the problem is Russians are going to think for probably the next two generations that democracy and, market economics are about what happened in the 90s. And that's just
right.
One version of democracy. It wasn't democracy. One version of market economics, and it doesn't have to be that way. But they're going to always think, holy shit, that's the biggest scam that, anybody ever cooked up. Because these people, they were so horrified by it that a lot of people thought maybe communism wasn't so bad after all.
Yeah.
Nobody hated communism more than these people,
Oh, man, am I going to spend the next half hour complaining about that. That's such an important point. No, I mean, seriously, that's the most important thing anybody ever said out loud just now. Did you hear that, y'all? Everybody thinks, geez, maybe the Soviet Union wasn't so bad after they get a load of us. How do you like that? Ugh. I'm sorry, but that...
It's infuriating. Absolutely.
I remember the Cold War. I was a little kid, and I was scared I was going to get caught up in a nuclear exchange between Ronald Reagan and whoever he picked a fight with. And I remember learning that we were better than them because we were free, and they weren't. And they were right about what they said about the Soviet Union, but boy, were they wrong about us, man. What a disgrace.
I know. And it was so horrible. Is the Russians themselves, when they finally overthrew communism, they, for a few years, that they really thought... They were, pretty cynical and skeptical about each other and about their own, anybody who might go to power who was Russian, but they really believed us and trusted us, too much. I mean, they let us run the place for about 4 or 5 years. Again, Larry Summers, the guy was literally writing economic decrees, presidential decrees, sending them to his guy in Moscow who was the privatization chief. He just stamped the Yeltsin signature and it became law. And, if you want to know why the Russians are so anti-American now, and so kind of paranoid about us and so sort of sensitive, that's why. We ran the place into the ground when they kind of let us run everything. And they assumed actually, oh, okay, so all along you guys were lying throughout the Cold War. You had no good, decent intentions whatsoever. Your whole goal all along was just to come in here and plunder the place. Just like Marx said, and we never believed Marx, and now maybe we will.
Right.
It's infuriating, yes. It's infuriating because what do we get from that? We got nothing but a potential enemy when we didn't have to have an enemy. If you read about this in 2008 in the Georgia War, Cheney actually wanted to bomb the Russians.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. So he wanted to bomb. It's insane. And actually, even Bush and Hadley, who was a neocon, were so shocked and horrified that, they kind of had to shelve the plan.
I know. Yeah, everybody was sitting around going, thank God for Stephen Hadley, the voice of reason up there,
exactly.
Lockheed lawyer, stopping the world war from breaking out.
Exactly.
Jesus.
And how insane is that? It's just that he was, slightly less psychopathic than Cheney, who's totally unhinged. I mean, that guy...
Well, and look, here's the thing, too. I mean, the truth of this is so blatant. When you look at the conservatives, I mean, there was already a pretty tough split in the 70s and 80s between the conservatives and the neocons.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few of the conservatives kind of broke off and became the paleoconservatives.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some of the neocons, like Jude Winiski, even they went with the paleocons. And, Pat Buchanan was the one, I guess, who stated their case the clearest, which was, hey, look, we were in favor of all this Cold War to protect us from the Soviet menace, but the tanks are back behind the Ural Mountains. Keep your promise. The promise was, this is Nixon's speechwriter talking, the promise was when the Cold War was over, the Cold War would be over. If the Warsaw Pact is gone, gone. It's time to break up NATO and bring our troops home from around the world. Even Gene Kirkpatrick, the neocon, former commie turned right-wing warmonger, said, now we can be a normal country in a normal time. And instead, they declared war on the world. It's been 20 years now. And now you look at the containment of communism policy or the containment of the Soviet Union policy. It's simply the exact same map, only the containment ring has moved even closer to Russia. Now we got puppets in every Central Asian dictatorship, or we're working on it, and all of NATO, although less and less so with Ukraine and Poland these days, but it couldn't be clearer that the American government betrayed the American people and decided instead to go full force with the empire, kick the Russians while they're down, and take over as much of Eurasia as they could.
Yeah, absolutely. And these people are, they're just, I don't know. I think they're degenerate pigs and freaks, and we shouldn't even look at them as if they're people that we would recognize from our own circles. Like, they're very different, and they belong in, like, maximum security prisons, I think. And yeah. You know, what you said about the Republican Party is absolutely right. It got taken over by a really energized and, cynical and just weird. I mean, really, like a weird bunch of, I don't know, 60s losers who weren't part of the whole cool hippie thing. I don't know what their problem was. But these guys somehow had all the energy and co-opted a lot of the Republican Party. And
God, it's almost like it'd be better if you let the jocks like Bush Sr. run the thing than the nerds, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you remember, I was thinking about that too. You know, somehow nerds became very cool in the last 10, 20 years, but like before that, the idea about nerds was always that they're dangerous, they're eventually going to like build some, you know, doomsday bomb and get back at the world. And I think we got to go back to that model again, like,
yeah.
Because they're pretty scary. If you watch this, there's this amazing documentary called The Trap by Adam Curtis. You can actually like watch it on YouTube. And it all starts off with game theory, and the guy who invented game theory, which wound up influencing so much of our thoughts, our economics, everything. He was a paranoid, schizophrenic, nerd, freak. And he, his idea was that every single person is this lonely, suspicious, deceitful creature who has, you know, the worst intentions, and he believed everybody else has the worst intentions. And he developed a whole model of humanity based on that we can all be in an equilibrium of loneliness, horribleness, and mutual suspicion. And he used that to sort of model nuclear war, and we kind of based our nuclear war strategy based on this guy's game theory. But then it got used in economics and so on and so forth. It's somehow the worst people wound up becoming the most influential. And I mean, that's a big question. How the hell did that happen?
Yeah. All right. Now, I've already broken the deal and kept you over time. Can I keep doing that, or do I need to let you go?
No, I gotta go, storm the gates of Bastille right now.
Well, you know, it's probably better that way, because, you know, if we talk too much longer, and you got any better, then you'd be a libertarian, and that wouldn't be good. So we're gonna leave you as, like, the best some kind of lefty that there is out there.
Some kind of lefty. All right, man.
Well, I don't want to categorize you too tight, you know, you're an individual, you do what you want.
No, I'm actually just a left-wing sheeple, or whatever you call it, you know.
Oh, well, nah, come on.
I'm joking.
Certainly not. You're a shepherd of some kind of faction out there, man. I love it, and I'm glad that you're out there at exiledonline.com. Everybody, that's Mark Ames. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me on, Scott.
Hey, everybody, Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Admit it, our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. So stop by LibertyStickers.com. We've got more than 1,000 anti-government, anti-war stickers for you to choose from, including the right is wrong, the left is stupid, Iraq, America's West Bank, detain Eric Holder, only liars and cowards want war with Iran, empire, welfare for the rich, war for the poor. I wish I could go back in time to murder Woodrow Wilson. Old right, new left, unite against empire. And steroids are good when cops take them. Fight back while you still can. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.